From Silicon Valley, California, this is Fresh Dialogues.
Good morning. I'm with Firuze Dumas. She is the author of two books, the first of which, Funny in Farsi, was nominated for the James Thurber Prize for American Humor. She is a Silicon Valley-based immigrant from Iran and one of the few authors tackling the fresh territory of humor from the viewpoint of a rich Persian heritage. Firuze just released a new collection of essays entitled Laughing Without an Accent. Firuze, thank you for joining me today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Firstly, I want to congratulate you on your new book, a fun collection of essays about your adventures as an Iranian American. A local reviewer said it helps shed light on what it means to be American. How so?
Well, I think Iranians are probably the most misunderstood group in this country because for most people, all they know about Iran is what they see on the news. So reading stories about just an ordinary family, I think for a lot of Americans, is actually quite eye-opening.
Before you even arrived here, you saw the United States as a place where you could get Barbie dolls. Having lived here for over 30 years, how do you see the United States now?
Well, I think right now we're at just such a pivotal point in American history. And I mean, I have to say, you know, I love this country. I think there are just aspects of this country that you cannot find anywhere else. And, you know, the optimism we talked about and, you know, the opportunities. One thing that really does scare me is I think there is a certain small-mindedness in this country that is really gaining a movement, and I don't want to see that. You know, I don't want to see Americans start to blame immigrants for all their problems. I don't want to see America become a country that's divided and where somebody who maybe has the wrong kind of accent or looks a certain way will be limited. Because the strength of this country has always been in its openness and its acceptance. And if America loses that, then it loses an essential element of what makes it so wonderful.
That's a strong statement. And where do you see your part in that? Because I've heard you talk at the Commonwealth Club, and behind all the humor, it seems to me you have a bigger mission.
Absolutely.
Can you talk about the mission?
You know, I do travel the country. I speak at a lot of education conferences. I give a lot of keynote speeches to educators. And one thing that I'm trying to do is to try to help educators teach the concept of shared humanity to their students. Because it's not about necessarily what's even happening in other parts of the world. I don't want to see this country become divided. And for example, right now we do have a generation, a post-September 11th generation, that often does look at that often looks at Middle Eastern immigrants as potential terrorists. Well, you think about these kids growing up, you know, they're going to be someday working with Middle Easterners. Well, that's not going to work if that's how they're regarding their coworkers. So for me, it's very important that we understand the difference between what is happening in a country because of the politicians and what is happening because of just the regular people. And I think in America, people don't often differentiate between those two. So part of what I do when I you know, go across the country speaking is simply trying to make people learn that people have a lot in common with one another. It's the politicians who are divisive and often very hateful and create these problems. And it's just important to know the difference between those.
And do you feel from the feedback you've got so far that your message is hitting home?
People oh, absolutely. Are getting I mean, it? My lecture career is, you know, is busier and busier every year. So I know that schools where I speak or conferences where I speak are definitely getting something out of it. Again, my concern goes to what direction this country is going in, and I hope that I will continue to be invited to speak, because there always has to be, I guess, somebody open-minded enough to invite me to their campus.
Why do you feel we need to change the way people think of Iran and break stereotypes?
Well, because, you know, having stereotypes weakens everybody. And again, you know, the strength of this country has always been letting people in and letting people become the best version of themselves they can be, because that benefits the entire country. And the problem when you have one group that, you know, you're holding down is, you know, you are holding down the whole country, because the talents of that group then will never be maximized. And if you look back at history, you know, no country has ever benefited from oppressing any group to any degree. So, you know, I want to make sure that that this country remains the great country that it is and that it can be.
And how do you feel our differences can unite us?
Well, tolerance is something that helps everybody in every situation. And it also brings about self-acceptance. Because when you realize that, you know, you and I may be very different. Obviously, you know, we have different accents, but that when you realize that so many of our struggles are the same, it just brings about an understanding that benefits us as neighbors, as coworkers, as fellow countrymen. So it's just win-win. Also, I think when you look at the differences that different, say, ethnic groups have, if you go a little bit deeper, you realize that when it comes to the important things in life, most people agree on them. You know, we all want the best for our children. We want our children to be safe, want them to have good schools. We want them to have, you know, food they can eat that's nutritious for them. And so when you start really looking at the differences, you realize they're not the biggest parts of who we are. But the biggest parts of who we are really our commonalities.
I understand in Iran your book has been published.
Funny in Farsi, the Persian version is a huge hit in Iran. It's actually much bigger in Iran than it is in America. And, of course, it's ironic because I will never make a cent from because Iran does not adhere to international copyright laws. Mm-hmm. But I worked with a translator because I knew that it would be illegally translated. So I wanted to sort of make a preemptive strike. So I worked with a translator in Iran and who did a great job. And then the book had to go to the Censors Bureau. Because in Iran, no book can be made, no movie can be made without the Censors Bureau. And they did remove one chapter from Funny in Farsi, and it's the chapter entitled The Ham Amendment. Yeah, and it's the soul of my book, so I was very upset that they removed that. And it's really upset the government. They have written against me. I think when they okayed this book, they had no idea that it would become the hit that it has become.
Can you give us a synthesized version of the Ham Amendment? Because as I recall, you were a little girl and you were learning all about Islam and what was forbidden. And your father, up until then, had been a big fan of ham. Even though your mother wouldn't eat it, you weren't. Right. You wouldn't eat it, and you would go on shopping trips with him to get the ham and watch him eat it. It was a really interesting little detail there. And then one day you found out that at school that he was eating forbidden food. What did you learn at school exactly?
Well, that we're not supposed to eat ham. That you know, if we do, you know, I don't remember if they said you go to hell, but it was something horrible. Mm-hmm. So I came home and I said, "Dad, you're not supposed to be eating ham." And he said, no, it doesn't matter what we eat. It's how we treat our fellow man. That's the only detail that God cares about. And he said, it doesn't matter if you're Jewish or Muslim or Christian. The only thing that matters is how you treat your fellow man.
That is such a powerful statement. I can understand why you were upset that they cut that out.
My father was very upset. And he said, well, you know, maybe the cleric, you know, the mullah who was reading at the Census Bureau, maybe he didn't like Jews, and so maybe your next book should be Accomplishments of Jews I Have Known, interspersed with ham recipes.
Your dad is very funny. He hasn't lost his humorous touch. Was there any way you could come back to the Censor Bureau and say, can you have a rethink, or is that not something you could consider?
No. That's an American way of thinking. No. Once the mullah has spoken.
And how does that go about? Do you get an email from the mullah?
Oh, no.
Or what is the whole process for that? It's fascinating.
It's interesting because there is absolutely no written process. You take your manuscript to the Censors Bureau, you hand it over, and you have no idea when you're going to get it back. In fact, you know, James Joyce's Ulysses has been at the Censors Bureau for over 17 years now. And then, so there you go. But that's a hard book to get.
So it's stuck in there.
Yeah, it's stuck in there somewhere. They can't.
So you were, how long did your process
take?
Mine took
6 months. So I was very relieved. But there are no written guidelines. So it's based entirely on the person reading your manuscript. And so I kept thinking, well, maybe I'll get a mullah with a sense of humor. You know, and in a way, I think even having lost one chapter, it could have been much worse.
So that was the only thing. They just cut out the whole chapter. They didn't go through line editing,
they
parts.
They took out two little details. Another part of the book, I mentioned that in my next life, I wanted to come back as a Swedish woman. And they said, no, Islam, only one life. So I had to just reword that sentence. But
so they weren't angry at the Swedish
context.
No. They're not against blondes.
No. They like blondes in Iran, I'll tell you that much.
Do you still have some family in Iran?
I have lots.
And what is their reaction to your book?
Oh, they're tickled. I mean, they're in their minds, I'm this huge celebrity.
And when you go over there?
See, I can't go over there now because the government's written against me. So I have to wait until this government leaves.
In what context have they written against you?
Because I criticized the revolution and the taking of the American hostages in the American embassy, that really angered the government. And so they've written out against me because of that.
In newspapers or?
Well, the government has a website and they put a very long article there about me about a year ago. I mean, once you're in their radar screen, I would not go there. No.
And do you ever fantasize when you're lying in the bath, for example, what you would say to Ahmadinejad if you had the opportunity?
Well, I have nothing to say to him. I've thought about it. Mm-hmm. But I think he's such an unreasonable man that no matter what I say, he'd probably say, "Oh, you stupid woman." And that would be the end of the conversation.
You don't imagine tickling his funny bone and...
I don't think he has a funny bone.
So I understand you're a Muslim.
Oh, I'm a secular Muslim. And it's funny because I travel to places where they'll say, "Well, you're Muslim." I go, "Okay, I'm a secular Muslim." And I've discovered not everybody knows what that means. Because I think people kind of look at me sometimes, I think they think that I'm saying I'm a sexual Muslim. So.
And do you elaborate for them?
Well, I do. And then I explain. I say, "Well, let's say, you can be Christian and you can go to church every Sunday and, observe everything. Or you can be a Christian who only goes to church on Easter. Or you can be a Christian and never go to church and never adhere to any of the rules." I say, "Well, there's also a wide gamut in Islam." And people are very surprised. I mean, they think like all Muslims are just, we're out there praying five times a day and, morning to night talking about religion. And they're shocked to hear that actually most Iranians are secular Muslims. That really shocks people. More than thinking that I'm a sexual Muslim, I think even is silly.
Sexual Muslim. That's hilarious. Well, it's been a real pleasure chatting with you, Firuze.
Thank you, Alison. And I love your accent.
Thank you.
I bet you get better customer service than if you talk like this.
I don't know. I think you have a beautiful accent.
Thank you for listening to Fresh Dialogues. This is Alison Van Diggelen, with special thanks to Tom Kromkowski and Carol Pecora for technical support, and Kevin McLeod, who wrote and produced our music.